Okay, we're continuing our study of Sefer Shmuel Aleph. We are towards the end of Perek Chaf Ches, chapter 28, which really is we're getting closer to the end of Shmuel Aleph, which is it's significant because we grow up with the idea of Shmuel Aleph, and for those of us that have a book that only goes up to Shmuel Aleph, it's significant because we're finishing a book again from the perspective of Chazal. There's no real significance because Chazal and the Talmud don't look at Shmuel Aleph, Shmuel Beis. Let's just say for Shmuel, and the whole breakdown was not it's not Jewishly based, but it divides it nice and even. You know, many sixth grades learn Shmuel Aleph, and then in seventh grade you learn Shmuel Beis. But we're getting closer to it. It's still an accomplishment, nonetheless. You know, 31 prakim of learning together. So here we're in Perek Chaf Ches, Pasuk Yud Ches, verse 18, and it's in the middle of this kind of very troubling parak where Shaul is at a loss. He's at a loss of what to do because there's a pending war with the Plishtim. He's trying every possible avenue to know how he should be approaching the war, how he should handle the war, but trying to find out from Hashem what is the right approach for him and the Israeli army. And there's no answer until he finally resorts to something which on the surface level is definitely anti-Torah in the sense that he's going to someone who practices the practice of Ov, of speaking to spirits of those who have passed away. And he asks this one woman who seems to still be clandestinely practicing this, because he himself had outlawed the practice, the Tanakh told us, and he wants to bring up, and he to some degree, according to certain approaches, successfully conjures up the spirit of Shmuel. That's who he wanted to hear from, and that's who he successfully hears from. And Shmuel responds in the last few psukim that we read together. Shmuel seems to be upset that his spirit has been requested. There might even be some discomfort to the spirit, whatever that means. And then Shmuel says, I don't even know why you're asking me. You're done. The kingdom has been torn away from you. The kingdom has been given to someone better than you. Finally, Shmuel actually mentions that it's David. That's the first time that Shmuel mentions that it's David. And we might have mentioned this last time to close, that at this point, Shmuel has nothing to fear by saying David's name. Shmuel's already dead, so you can't kill someone that's already dead. Pasuk Yud Ches, Shmuel provides the reasoning, Ka'asher lo shamata b'kol Hashem. What's the reason that the kingdom was taken away from you, Shaul? Ka'asher lo shamata b'kol Hashem, because you did not listen to the voice of God. V'lo asisa charon apo ba'amalek, and you didn't carry out his anger, the wrath of his anger has a capital H. You did not, as a messenger of Hashem, carry out Hashem's anger against the nation of Amalek to the extent that you were supposed to. Al-kein ha-davar hazeh asalecha Hashem hayom hazeh. That is why this is being done to you this day. This is the culmination. This is the actualization of the punishment that you were told about, that you were told you were going to be punished. You were told that the kingdom was going to be removed from you. That's happening now. It's happening today. It's happening in the context of this war with the Plishtim. What's interesting is that we know in our study we saw that there were two errors that Shaul made that both seemed to play a role in him not becoming and not remaining king. The first error was in a previous war with the Plishtim, when he was supposed to wait for Shmuel to come for a period of 7 days. Shmuel would come, Shmuel would bring Karbanos, and then the war would be able to continue and Shaul would be victorious. But Shaul didn't have the patience to wait. He thought he waited the amount of time, he didn't wait more, and soldiers were leaving him and he felt very nervous. And so he went ahead and bring the Karbanos, and then Shmuel came and Shmuel gave him rebuke. Then the second, that was in Perek Yud Gimel, in Perek Tes Vav, chapter 15, that was the episode where he was told to destroy Amalek, men, women, child, and all the animals. He left the king alive and he left the best quality animals alive. And that's, so why is only the second sin being mentioned? So most probably it has to do with the fact that the punishment was, there were different levels to the punishment. Level number one, when Shaul made the error in the war with the Plishtim, it was that your monarchy will not last for as long as it would have. So it's going to be shortened, but the time is not necessarily determined. Shaul could have remained on king for X amount of time, and his family could have remained in at least some type of secondary type of vice king role that we discussed. As we've mentioned multiple times, the kingship was always going to eventually go to the tribe of Yehuda. It had to, but it didn't have to go as quickly as it did. And they could have had some type of secondary prime minister type of role that his family from the tribe of Benjamin would have had. The second episode, which is what Shmuel is mentioning, the reason why it's being torn away from you totally and your family totally, and the reason why it's happening now, only 2 years into your being king, is because of the fact that you didn't listen to Hashem in the context of the war with Amalek. And even though, right, we pointed this out in the context of the war with Amalek, Shaul almost did everything right. He killed out all we say it very, very easily. He killed out all the men, women, and children. He left alive one person, the king, presumably to execute in a more public fashion. And he kept the best quality animals alive, even as he gave the excuse so they could bring carbonos, so they could do something. But it boiled down then, and still the same analysis applies. He was a king who was charged with a commandment from Hashem, and he didn't follow the commandment fully. And that not following the commandment fully is like not following it at all. To the extent that the Tanakh describes it, ki lo shamata b'kol Hashem. You, the king, didn't listen to the voice of Hashem. In the first two commandments given to you as king, you failed. And therefore you failed as being king. And therefore, as the Pasuk mentioned before, the kingdom is torn away from you and it's given to someone better than you. Pasuk Yutes, Vayitein Hashem gam es Yisrael imcha biyad plishtim. And what's going to happen now, right, gam, what's also going to be happening is Hashem is going to give over, meaning in a losing approach to this war, Hashem is going to give over the Israeli army, imcha, with you, biyad plishtim, into the hands of the plishtim, meaning this pending war is going to be a loss. Umachar ata uvanecha imi. And tomorrow, you and your sons will be with me. Gam esmachne Yisrael yitein Hashem biyad plishtim, and that the camp of the Israelite camp will be given over into the hands of the Plishtim. It's mentioning that phrase again, and it's almost like the Pasuk starts with the fact that the Israelites are going to be given over in the hands of the Plishtim. It ends with that thought. Why would the Pasuk repeat itself? It's maybe to highlight the middle of the Pasuk. The middle of the Pasuk is the focus of Umachar ata uvanecha imi. Tomorrow you and your sons will be with me. The extent of a person, right? If we're taking the approaches that the real spirit of Shmuel was actually conjured up, was actually brought up. So here you have a person that's dead saying, tomorrow you and your sons are going to be with me. Tomorrow you and your sons are going to be with me has terrible meaning, because it means that you're going to be dead. It means that you and your sons are going to be killed in this battle, and you're going to be with me. The commentaries take some type of comfort in the phrase "Umachar ata uvanecha imi," because however we understand what happens after a person passes away, to whatever extent we understand what Olam Haba, what the world to come is, so we would all assume that the portion in Olam Haba that Shmuel has is something that everyone would want. Shmuel is clearly a tzaddik, was clearly someone righteous. He was a navi, he was the shofet. So the Radak and Rashi and others, they pick a chazal, explain, the Gemara says, that imi, when it says umachar atav vanecha imi, b'mechitzasi, in my, like, kind of in my mechitza, in my area of Olam Haba, you are going to be. The fact that Shaul deserved to be punished for actions, specifically, the Gemara talks about specifically what happened in Nov, Ira Kohanim, that it was on Shaul's command that Nov, Ira Kohanim was wiped out. Specifically that, maybe you'll add in the fact that he the errors that he made in terms of the following the commandments of Hashem, so you might say that he should lose out on his portion in Olam Haba. The punishment, though, was going to happen in Olam Hazeh. This entering the Jewish people into a war with the Plishtim, and as Shmuel is now prophesizing, being killed in that war, that is considered to be his punishment. Going through the experience of losing the war and being killed, that is going to be his punishment, so that Umachar atau vanecha imi, tomorrow you'll be with me, b'mechitzasi, then in Olam Haba, the punishment will not be felt. So while it's horrifying words, Umachar atau vanecha imi, there is some level of comfort that if you go through, and one medrash actually basically describes how Shmuel was telling Shaul, you have a choice. You can run from this battle, but if you run from this battle and you don't receive the punishment in this world, then you'll have to receive punishment in the next world. By going through and allowing yourself to walk into this lion's den of a war where you're going to lose and you and your sons are going to be killed, that will allow for you to receive your portion of Olam Haba.
Israel is being punished for Shaul, like they're losing this war. Like it seems like they're losing it because he needs to lose it to be killed.
It's a hard question. It's a good question. One has to imagine that we can't know the ways of Hashem in the extent that, for whatever reason, these soldiers who are going to lose their life in the battle, why they're being chosen to lose their life in the battle, we have to imagine that it's for, you know, it's for the right reasons that it has to happen this way, and that each soldier who's present at the battle and who loses life in the battle, deserved it to some extent. How you understand that, it's obviously easier said than done to understand it. Why is it umachar ata uvanecha, you and your sons? So apparently his sons, to whatever extent we understand that they deserved for it to happen as well. What's interesting is that the downfall of the house of Eli, the similarities, because Eli, the sign that was given to Eli that everything that the Navi was telling him about was that both of his sons would die in the same day. Mm-hmm. And then when he received the news, we know that he died. So it very likely could have all been on the same day or within a day. And the downfall of Shaul is happening in a similar fashion. I don't know any connection, but it's just it's something to take note. In the same Sefer, we have like downfalls of Eli to a certain extent had a dynasty. Mm-hmm. Of being the shofet, being the Kohen Gadol, mm-hmm. and now Shaul had a little bit this what was beginning to look like a dynasty, obviously very, very short lived. So this is what Shmuel, this again according to most approaches, the spirit of Shmuel is delivering. If you take the strict Rambam's approach, mm-hmm. of saying that this was not real, this was all a hoax put forth by this woman, it seems to be really elaborate. Mm-hmm. How could she make this guarantee? How could she make this guarantee that the spirit of Shmuel is saying, tomorrow you and your sons are going to be with me? So you could take the approach that she just, for whatever reason, she had knowledge about this pending war, and just the cards were stacked against Shaul. And if you take a person who's not so confident about this battle and you tell him he's going to lose, in all likelihood, if he's going up against an enemy that is not strong, that is much stronger, and he doesn't have the confidence, presumably he'll lose. So you might make the argument that based on this specific pasuk, it sounds like the other approaches are more correct. That for whatever reason, either this one time the spirit did come, which is the opinion of some. some who ascribe to the Rambam's idea that in generally this doesn't happen, and it's all usually a hoax, here this time it did happen as a one-time miracle. So then, you know, that you, or that there is truth to this type of black magic practice, and that's why it was the spirit of Shmuel. You know, for her to go out, if this was a hoax, you know, why would you include this pasuk? It seems to be too much of a risk, because if tomorrow you live, then this whole thing was for naught. When it's one of the signs, then one of the signs that a Navi Sheker, a false prophet, is a false prophet. So this actually works. This actually works for the woman, that when you promise something good, if a Navi promises something good is going to happen, and it doesn't happen, that's a sign that the Navi is a false prophet. And if the person is presenting themselves as a prophet, male or female, they are, and they're proven to be a false prophet, so that they're actually receive the death penalty. If a Navi promises something bad to happen and it doesn't happen, that does not prove them to be a false prophet. The idea being is that the Jewish people could have done teshuva. So maybe I'm making an argument now the other way, is that maybe she went ahead and said not necessarily a prophecy, but she said a promise of doom. So if you go doom and gloom, then Shaul could have maybe done tshuva, and then if it didn't happen, Shaul wouldn't think she was a liar. He might have thought he was able to do some type of tshuva. But it definitely, to my simple understanding, it seems that she wouldn't make this promise if she didn't know for sure. Now, Shaul clearly thinks he is hearing the spirit of Shmuel, because originally, after she, in Pasuk Yudalad, when Shaul asked for a description of what the spirit looks like, because apparently she was able to see it, but he was not, and she described him as a zakein, and with a me'il, wearing a cloak, and Shaul realized that is, you know, in his mind, that was the spot on description of Shmuel. So he bowed down. So here, after hearing these words, he bows down again in Pasuk Chaf. Vayimaher Shaul quickly, he hurried. Vayipol milo komaso arza, his full height, bowed down onto the ground. Vayira me'od midivrei Shmuel, and he was extremely fearful of the words of Shmuel. Gam, but also, seemingly relating to the fact that he bowed down, gam also koach lo hayavo. He physically had no koach. He physically had no strength. Ki lo achal lechem kol hayom v'chol halayla. He hadn't eaten the entire day, the entire night. Presumably due to the fact that he was so nervous about this pending battle. And he was so nervous about the fact that he was trying to communicate with Hashem and not successfully getting through and not getting a response. He hadn't eaten anything. So on the one hand, we have Shaul, it's saying, Vayimayer Shaul hurried up and he bowed down, which seems to be maybe a natural reaction. The same way he bowed down, right, knowing that he was in the presence of Shmuel, now he bows down after hearing what Shmuel says, almost as a sign of accepting the words of Shmuel. That unfortunate. This is an unfortunate piece of news to hear, that it's final and this war with the Plishtim is going to happen and he's going to lose and he and his sons are going to be killed. But by bowing down, he's showing that he's accepting the verdict of Hashem. He's accepting what Shmuel said. Similar to Eli, when the Ish Elokim came to Eli. So if I'm not mistaken. If I'm not mistaken, when Shmuel told Eli what the prophecy he had heard, which was about the fact that Eli's household was going to be destroyed, mm-hmm. This is in Perek Gimel, Pasuk Yud Ches, right? Vayagid lo Shmuel as kol advarim velo chiched b'menu. Shmuel told Eli everything, didn't leave out any of the details. Vayomer, and Eli said, Hashem hu hatov be'inav yaseh. Hashem is good, whatever he does, meaning I accept. I'm accepting this horrible prophecy. So Shaul bowing down here may be some element of accepting the word of Shmuel for being the truth. It says he's extremely afraid from the words of Shmuel. So while he's willing to accept that death is coming, that doesn't mean that he's not going to be afraid that death is coming. And at the same time, there seems to be some practical element to him lying down. And this you might understand this because it's a little curious. Why, if he bows down twice in the context of this story, why does it express it differently? The first time he bows down, and if you take a look back to Pasuk Yodalad, it says, Vayeda Shaul Kishmuel Hu, Vayikod Apayim, Artsa Vayishtachu. So Vayikod Apayim, he bowed down on his face, Artsa to the ground, Vayishtachu, and he prostrated himself. So there should be some type of similar language. Why here is it Vayipol Melo Kamaso Artsa? Why is it he falling his entire height? It's a rather strange expression, unless you take the context of the end of the pasuk as well, saying gam koach lohayavo, because he didn't eat anything. It almost sounds like he fully collapsed. His entire body collapsed on the ground. And you might say it's everything coming together. It's the mental anguish of this war. It's hearing the news of what's going to happen to him. And again, according to all opinions, Shaul thinks that he's hearing real news from the spirit of Shmuel. And then it's the fact that physically, he's physically drained. He hasn't had any nourishment. When we say lechem, we don't just mean, you know, he wasn't going on like a carb diet, eating everything else. Lechem is symbolic of food, meaning he hadn't eaten that. Kol ayom v'kol alayla. Pasuk Chaf Aleph. The last couple of psukim here are rather strange, because you could end this episode in terms of the perek, and even if you want to say that the division of the prakim are not from Chazal, but you could end this episode by just saying that Shaul heard the words and went on his way. We seem to have like an addendum to the story of Shaul being totally lacking nourishment, and how do we get nourishment back into Shaul? And it doesn't seem to go so simply. So I'm not sure if I have the best answer to explain why these psukim are necessary, because it's in the Sefer and that's the way it was written. And that's the way the Navi wanted us to have, and that's the way Hashem wants us to have it. But what does this add for us is something to be thinking about. Pazachaf Aleph, Vatavo Ha'isha El Shaul. The woman comes to Shaul. Shaul, who's laid out there on the floor, almost passed out. The woman comes up to Shaul. Vatera Ki Nivhal Ma'od. She saw, Ki Nivhal Ma'od, that he's very afraid. He's very fearful. Maybe he's trembling. Vatomer Elav, and she says to him, so we have this woman who conjured up the spirits. She is now saying to the king, she knows it's Shaul now. Originally she didn't, but now she knows. Hinei shama shefchascha bekolecha. Behold, your maidservant, referring to herself, listen to your voice. V'asim nafshi b'chapai, and I, she says, I placed my life in my hands. I mean, I took a great risk by practicing something that's been outlawed. Vo'eshma es devarcha, I listened to your voice, asher dibarte elai, that you spoke to me. I listened to you. Not only did I agree to bring up a spirit, but I followed, you asked to bring up the spirit of Shmuel, I was successful. I brought up the spirit of Shmuel. So she's presenting the fact that, number one, she's still acting subservient. She calls herself Shivchaska, your maidservant. But she basically says that you owe me. I listened to you. I put my life on the line and I listened to you. And I followed everything you said. Pasuk Chaf Beis. Va'ata, and now, Shema na gam ata b'kol shefchasecha. Please listen, you, also you should listen to my voice. B'kol shivgazecha, to the voice of your maidservant. V'asima lefanecha, pas lechem ve'echol. I will place before you bread, ve'echol, and you should eat. V'hi b'cha koach, so that you should have strength. Ki seilech baderech, when you go on the way. So, presumably, why does she feel the need to make an argument? Usually, if someone is starving for food, the best argument you can make is just put the food down, and naturally, the person will want to eat the food. She sees something within Shaul, and the pasuk says she sees that he's trembling. She sees something within him that he doesn't want to eat, and so she's making this deal. She's bargaining with him. She's saying, "I listen to you. Now you listen to me." So you might, if she would have said, you know, I listen to you, you listen to me, you know, pay me something, or get out of here before I get in trouble. She's basically saying, I care about you in the sense that I want you to eat. Pasuk of Gimel says, Vayima'ein. And he refused. Vayomer and Shaul said, Lo ochal. I'm not going to eat. Vayifzru bo avadav v'gam ha'isha v'yishma l'kolam. So now his servants, right, the two servants who were with him, we told that he took two trusted servants. The Mefarshim told us it was Avner and Amasa, it was his two generals. So his servants, his two generals, they come and they're kind of urging him strongly. The Gama Isha and the woman also. So now Vayishma Lekolam, he listened to their voice. Vayaka Meha'aretz, he got up from the ground. Vayeshev Alamita, he sat on a bed, right? So that was kind of a slow process of rehabilitation from him being, you know, almost passed out on the ground. Now he's on a bed. Pasuk of Dalid. V'la'isha egel marbeik babayis. The woman had a fattened cow in the house. V'atimaher v'atizbacheyu. She quickly hurried up and slaughtered the cow. V'atikach kemach v'atala. She took flour and kneaded the flour. V'atofehu matzos. She was able to bake it into matzos, which we all know bake a lot quicker than bread. Vatagesh lefnei Shaul, she set everything before Shaul, lefnei Avadav, and before his two servants. Vayochelu, and they ate. Vayakumu, they got up. Vayelchu balaylahu, and they went on that night. So what's the meaning of this addendum to the story? Right, it could have just said, right, Shaul bowed down on the ground. Maybe he was a little weak, so she gave him food, and he went on his way. You might say that it almost looks like Shaul is giving up. That by Shaul not eating, right? So by not eating, so everyone knows that if you don't eat, you don't live. And Shaul, after hearing the words of Shmuel, excuse me, even if you don't want to call it a prophecy, the words of Shmuel, it sounds close to a prophecy, close to a promise. So it almost is like at this point, either Shaul's body is giving up, he just can't bring himself to eat, or maybe he's making the decision. It says, Vayima'ein, he protested, and he says, I don't want to eat. If he doesn't want to eat, he's not going to be able to go into battle. Well, it seems that here he's at the extent that he has nothing left in the tank. So why is the woman, why is the servants, why not let him just go? Why not let him just, if he doesn't eat, he'll die. He'll die right there in this woman's tent. So perhaps they're aware of that. Maybe, you know, she's clearly present for this message of Shmuel, and the spirit of Shmuel. If we're taking the approaches that it really was the spirit of Shmuel, and his servants, presumably they were, we don't hear about them, but they couldn't have been that far. They know that the king is engaging in something that is not, you know, that is technically illegal, right? It's not wise to leave the king in the hands of this stranger. And so presumably they hear the message also. And the message from Shmuel was, Umachar ato v'necha imi, but it's only if you go through with the way God is designing this to happen, that you lose your life in battle, not for lack of nourishment in this woman's tent, you know, this woman's tent or home in a place called Ein Dor, as we said. So maybe this is showing the role that they played in kind of bringing Shaul to allow for the plan to take place as designed. And so by giving him the nourishment, that he needed, he was able to vayakumu vayelchu balaylahu. He was able to eat. He was able to arise, and he was able to go forward at that on that night. Because again, you remember as the parak began, this whole thing happened under the cover of night. Shaul doesn't want the rest of his men knowing where he went. That's why he only takes two advisors. He doesn't want to be seen going into the home of some woman who is known for this practice, which is outlawed. And so he went at night. It happened at night, and he continues on his way at night. Parachavtes, which we're about to begin, it takes a break from the Shaul and the camera, you know, if you will. The camera focuses back on what's happening with David. Where's David? David is on the side of the Plishtim. David is with Achish. He had negotiated, and for about 4 months and 2 days, that's what the Pasuk seemed to say, David spent with the Plishtim, and he was with, and now there's a war pending. And we already saw in the beginning of Perachav Ches, the Perach that we just concluded, it said that David was with Achish, and Achish says, I want you to be my personal bodyguard. And we saw that David is very ambiguous, because David's in a tough spot. Because on the one hand, he's enjoying the fact that he's living in the lands of the Plishtim, because he hasn't been chased by Shaul in the last 4 months. On the other hand, he doesn't actually want to fight against his fellow brothers and sisters, and so he's kind of caught. So Perachav Tes is bringing us back to David and how to deal with David being on the side of the Plishtim. So Perachav Tes, Pasuk Aleph.
Can I ask a slightly related question?
Sure.
When did Rut live? When did all that take place?
So the story of Rus, which is recorded as its own story,
right,
happens in the days of the Shoftim, the days of the Judges period. The day of the Judges period, the Judges were ended with Eli and Shmuel. Right, technically Shmuel is the last shofet, the first Navi. The last shofet who, you know, lived his whole career as a shofet is Eli. And neither of those stories are described in Sefer Shoftim. They're described as we saw in Sefer Shmuel. But it was a period of after, right, the Jews come in to the land in the year 2488 from creation. Right, they got led out of Mitzrayim in 2448. They're in the desert for 40 years. So 2488, they come into the land. Yehoshua leads the people, I think, for a period of 24 years. 24 years, I think.
Our expert.
24 years.
Good.
And, you know, Yehoshua is not looked as a shofet, really. He's kind of looked at this bridge between the leadership of Moshe Rabbeinu. And after Yehoshua comes the time period of the shoftim, and it's a 350-year period. So the story of Rus takes place in that time period. You know, to some, you know, you do the math. We know that the union between Rus and Boaz produced a child whose name was Oved. And Oved had a child named Yishai, and Yishai had a child named David. So if you're working back, that's so Rus is the great, she's the great grandmother of David, right? His father's Yishai, his grandmother is Mrs. Oved, and his great-grandmother is Ruth. So that, you know, that's that genealogy. But we don't have the exact, I don't think we have the exact year. I imagine someone's figured out,
right.
You know.
No, I was just, because I never thought of it.
Right. So here we're coming back, again, we're coming back to the war. And that's in Megillas Rus. I think it starts out Vayhi Bimei Hash. I think it starts out in the day, and it was in the days of the judges. Take a look.
Right. Okay.
Take a look. So we're coming back to the war. Pasuk Aleph in Perachav Tes. Vayikbitzu Plishtim Eskol Machanehem Afeka. The Plishtim had gathered all of their camp at a place called Afek. V'Yisrael Chonim Ba'ayin Asher BiYisrael, and the Jews were encamped near an ayin, near a spring, Asher BiYisrael, that was in a place called, or near, Yisrael. Pasuk Beis. V'sarnei plishtim ovrim l'me'os v'la'lafim. The Sarnei Plishtim, the governors of the Plishtim. The governors of the Plishtim, we had already seen, the number quoted was five. There were five main Plishti cities. So we saw in the context of the Plishti war that didn't go well in Perek Dalet and Perek Hei when they were able to capture the Aron after the death of Eli. So there were five governors for the five main Plishti cities, for Ashdod, Ashkelon, Ekron, Gas, and Aza. So presumably it's that group of governors. And they were going through the Meos and the Lalafim. They were going through the units of 100, the units of 1,000. They were doing what army officials do before a war. They were going through the camp and taking stock of their men. The David Vanashav Ovrim Ba'acharona Imachish. And while this was happening, while the governors of the Plishtim were going through the ranks in the army, David and his men were passing at the rear with Achish. They were with the king, or at least one of the kings, Achish. So that's the scene. Pasuk Gimel. Vayomru Sarei Plishtim. Now the officers of the Plishtim, which doesn't seem to be the same group as the governors, the officers are below the governors. Ma, they said as follows: Maha Ivrim Ha'ela. What are these Hebrews? Why is there a Jewish presence in our camp? Now the question could be, you know, basic. Why are any Jews present? Right, we're about to go to war against the Israelites, against the Hebrews, right? And we've pointed out that Ivrim, when a non-Jew says the word Ivrim, it's usually used in a kind of a negative connotation. It's a derogatory term, it seems, right? Maha Ivrim Ha'ele, or maybe they're recognizing who it is. Not just any Jews. But how could David be here? David? David is the one who killed Goliath. David is a Plishti killer. So they might be saying, you know, maybe you Achish, maybe you figured out some way to somehow coexist with him. But to have him at the battlefield, to have him at a battle going up against the Israelites, Vayomer Achish said, El Sari Plishtim, to the officers of the Plishtim, Halo Zed David, Evet Shaul, Melch Yisrael. Is this, you want to know what he's doing here? Is this not David? David, who's the Eved of Shaul, who's the servant of Shaul, who is the king of Israel. Asher hayaiti ze yamim o ze shanim. Who has been with me for this period of days, or this period of years. Lo matzati bo me'uma miyom naflo arayom hazeh. And I have found nothing wrong with him from the day that he... Miyom naflo, from the day that he kind of fell upon me. Here the Mitzvah Sion says naflo means like shechno, to dwell. From the day that he fell upon me in terms of living with me, ad yom hazeh, until today. Now we know the amount of time. The amount of time it was already told to us was 4 months and a little bit, 4 months and 2 days. So when Achish says that he was with me yamim, right? Ze yamim o ze shanim, what does it mean? So some of Farshim understand, he was almost saying like, it's been so comfortable having David around, it's like he's been here for years. It's like, right, you know, right? Right. Sometimes you meet someone and you feel like you feel like you know them forever. You feel like you know them for such a long time. He says that the relationship that I've built with David is very strong. It's like it's been for a long time. Why does he Achish seems to go out of his way to connect David to Shaul? He could have just said, this is David. And like, everyone knows who David is. He goes out of his way to say that David was in his previous life an Eved to Shaul, the king of Yisrael. It's almost like he might be trying to make an argument that, listen, this is a great idea. We don't just have any Jew on our side. We have a Jew who knows the king very well. We have a Jew who was very close to the, a very close, right? It doesn't even mention the fact that we know that David was his son-in-law. And he's basically trying to make the argument that if David is now on the side of the Plishtim, right, if we were able to turn anyone to be on our side, it's like the biggest win that we're able to turn David that he'll be on our side. And so Achish thinks that he's properly defended himself, right? He was accosted by some of the officers who said to him, "What are these Hebrews doing here?" And Achish said to them, he answered them, that I'm vouching for David. He's been, nothing wrong has happened all the time that he's with me. He's on our side. Pasuk Dalet. Vayiktzifu alav sari plishtim. The Plishti officers, they became angry. Ketzef. They became angry on Achish, or towards Achish. Vayomru lo, and they said to Achish, Vayomru lo sari plishtim, the officers of the Plishtim, said to Achish, Hashav es ha'ish, return the man, meaning David. V'yashov el mekamo, he should return to his place, asher hifkadato sham, that you assigned for him, there. V'lo yeredi manu b'melchama, he should not come down to war with us. V'lo yelanu l'satan b'melchama, that he shouldn't be an enemy and an antagonist in war to us. Uvame Yisratza ze al el Adonav. Halo berashe ha'anashim ha'hem. Uvame, with what Yisratza ze el Adonav, with what can he make himself wanting or acceptable? Halo berashe ha'anashim ha'hem. It's not acceptable with the Rashi Hanashim, with the heads of these men, meaning ours. So the officers are angry now. They are not accepting the excuse or the logic of the king. Now they're not going so far as to say, let's execute David, because maybe they know that Achish will never go through with that, because he's vouching that he's my friend. But the one thing they're trying to get across is he cannot come to battle with us. And it could be what they're trying to say is that we hear what you're saying, but this is too much of a risk. Meaning, if you play devil's advocate for a second, in their minds, if David was fooling them, which we know he was, but if David was fooling them, At what moment would David reveal the fact that he's fooling them? Probably the moment that would cause the most harm to the Plishtim. Which probably means in the midst of battle, somewhere along the line, David will turn around and attack them. And so they're saying to the king, it's not worth the risk. You know what? You made a deal with him, make him, you gotta return him. Send him back. Whatever place you gave him to live, send him back there. We're not saying you have to kill him. We're not saying you have to send him back to the side of the Israelites. We're just telling you he shouldn't come down to war with us. We don't want him to be a thorn in the side of the war. And they put forward the argument, Pasuk Hey, Halo Zed David. They're like putting on the pressure. This is David. Is this not David? You said to us, is this not David who's been with me for months and he's been peaceful? Is this not David asher yanu lo b'mochlos lemor, that they said about him, that they answer about him with musical instruments, as we've seen this phrase before, hika shal ba'alafav v'david b'rilosav, that shal kills by the thousands, but David kills by the 10,000s. And it's a reference to Plishtim. This is that David. We're not willing to take the risk of having him in war with us. So at this point, Achish realizes that he's not going to win this argument. He's not going to be successful in getting David to stay by him. Pasuk Vav, which we know, right? We, the reader, knows, this is actually a blessing. It's a blessing for David because he's never going to have to make the tough call. He's never going to have to decide which side he's really on. And we know what he might have. We know that he would not never have harmed the side of the Israelites. But you know, it's almost like you have to appreciate the story for everything it's worth, right? Now Achish is going to have to deliver quote unquote bad news to David. But David, his inside, is going to be thinking, this is great news. But he's going to outwardly have to show that he's disappointed. Because if he outwardly shows that this is great news, that's going to give up his cover. And Achish would be like, what, you're happy to leave the battlefield? You're happy to leave my personal protection? So there's so much complexity to the story. You know, I always say that the chapters here could be turned into a play, could be turned into a film, Lahavdil. You'd have to have really good actors. Because the emotions are so real. Pasuk Vav, Vayikra Achish el David. So Achish called David, Vayomer Inglav, and he said to him, this is a very, very interesting language. Chai Hashem ki yashar ata. By the life of Hashem, parentheses, who I don't fully believe in, but I guess that's your God, so I'll go with it. I'll take a shvua in your God's name. Chai Hashem ki yashar ata. By Hashem's life, you are yashar. You are straight. V'tov be'enai, and good in my eyes. Tseischo v'wecha, you're going out, you're coming in. Iti b'machane, with me in the camp. Hilo matzati v'chara, I have found nothing wrong about you. Miyom bo'acha ilai ara yom hazeh, from the time that you arrived to me until today. Uve'enei haseranim lo tovata. But in the eyes of the governors, you're not good. So we didn't see that. We never actually saw that the governors made a complaint. We saw that it was the officers. What the pasuk seems to be telling us now is that you would kind of understand the flow of the psukim. Why were we told that the sarnim, the governors, were going throughout the camp? So we're being told that. And then immediately we're told that the officers went ahead and complained. Where did the officers get the idea from? Presumably it sounds like they got the idea from the governors. The governors told the officers. The officers told Achish. Achish went ahead and expresses this to David, and when he expresses this to David, he says, listen, you're good with me, but uve'ene hasarnim, in the eyes of the governors, which includes in the eyes of the officers, lo tovata, you are not good. Meaning, your presence for this battle is not considered to be good. V'ata and now, pasuk zayin, v'ata and now, shuv v'alech b'shalom, you should go in peace. And you shouldn't do anything wrong in the eyes of the Plishtim, the governors of the Plishtim. It's almost like the king is giving David friendly advice. Meaning, okay, you're excused from battle, but don't do anything to incriminate yourself in the eyes of the governor. Meaning, it's almost like the spotlight is on you. I vouched for you, which got you your safety, but it's getting you kicked off the battlefield. So take the exemption from war, and don't do anything evil in the eyes of the governors of the Plishtim. Don't do anything that would show you're anti-Plishti, because then you'll be putting the target on your back. Pasuk Ches. So again, it's wild. David's reaction. Vayomer David el Achish. David says to Achish, "Ki me asiti uma matzasa ba'avdecha. What did I do wrong? What did I do? What did you find in your servant? Miyom asher yisi ufanecha, from the day that I was before you, arayom azeh, until this day. Ki lo avo v'nolchamti ba'oyve adonai amel. Did I not go? Did I not go and go on and fight the enemies of the king? Meaning on all his whenever David went on those raiding parties." His argument to Achish was that he was taking care of enemies of the king. That's right. He was even killing fellow Israelites. So David has to, now even though the king said you did nothing wrong, but the natural thing is to say, but what did I do wrong? I did nothing wrong. And David has to have that reaction, even though internally David had to be extremely relieved. So you might practically ask the question, David should just say, okay, and leave. Right? Don't why David's making if David's successful, the king Achish say, oh, now I'll get you back into the battle. But David seemingly wants to show how much he's interested. He's keeping his cover going for as much as possible. And so David expresses disappointment. Disappointment not being able to go out to battle with the Plishtim. Pasuk Tes. Vayan Achish. Achish said, he answered, Vayomer al David and said to David, Yadati ki tovata be'enai kemalach elokin. I know that you are good in my eyes like an angel of God. Ach sarei plishtim amru, but it was the officers of the plishtim who said, lo yale imanu b'melchama, he should not come up with us into the war. Pasuk Yud. V'ata, and now hashkem ba'boker, get up early in the morning. V'avdei adonecha asher bo itcha, and the servants of your master that have come with you, meaning the men who are with you, should get up. V'shkamtem ba'boker, you'll get them up in the morning. Or lochem v'alechu, there will be light for you, and you should get on your way. So in Achish's response, number one, Achish swore in the name of Hashem. And then he says, in his final comment, he says, you've been so good, like a malach elokim, like an angel of God. So it could just be that Achish is he's a politician, and he recognizes when you speak to a Mitzri, so you should mention the gods of Mitzrayim. When you speak to a Hebrew, you should mention his God. To say that he had a real belief in Hashem, so why would you go to battle against the Israelites if you have a belief in Hashem? If you have a belief in Hashem, you should protect the Israelites. So presumably he's just saying what David wants to hear. And you should get up in the morning. So this happened at night. Presumably it's the same night that Shaul was busy with the spirit of Shmuel. So David was busy getting kicked out of camp, getting kicked out of the Plishti camp. Pasuk Yud Aleph, the parak concludes, is a relatively short parak of 11 psukim. Vayashkim David got up early, hu va'anashav, he and his men, lalechas baboker, to go in the morning, lashuv el eretz plishtim, to return to the land of the plishtim, away from the battlefield, Uplishtim alu Yisrael, and the Plishtim went up towards Yisrael. They were moving their camp closer to the actual camp of the Israelites. As we saw, the army of Shaul was near a brook, near a spring right near Yisrael. And so now the Plishti forces is moving closer. So it ends with David going back to just regular mainland Plishtim where he lived. And the Plishtim are getting even closer for war. So Be'ez Hashem, next time, we'll learn Perek Lamed, chapter 30, which is kind of a standalone Perek of something that happened while David was away at battle. And we'll have to discuss how it fits into the story.